I titled my message today, When God Says No to Our Requests, to Our Prayers. So Tim Keller is a pastor in New York City. He works with mostly young professionals. So he's an extremely smart dude. And he said something about prayer that's fascinating. And he said this: we can be sure our prayers are answered precisely in the way we would want them to be answered if we knew everything God knows. We didn't get that the first time. So we're gonna get it. He said, we can be sure our prayers are answered precisely in the way that we would want them to be answered if we knew everything God knows. In other words, you know all those times that God said no to our prayers, and we were wondering, why not, God? It seems really good. It's good for me and good for the kingdom if you answer this prayer, but he didn't. All those prayers, if we knew what God knew, would also say no to. That's what I'm saying. If we had the wisdom and knowledge of God, then we would see it the same way that God sees in all those answered or unanswered prayers, or the prayers to which the answer was no. Let me give you such a scenario where we just can't comprehend how anything good could come out of this. Of the PALS, P-A-L-S, passing away. So they're a missionary couple, 29 years old, and God called them to go to Japan. It was a struggle for them because they have three young children, 4 years old, I believe, no, 3 years old, almost 2 years old, and then 2 months old, three children. They struggled for years with this calling that God has given them, but finally they decided to let go and submit to God's calling on their lives, and so they started preparing. They sold their house, they sold their car, they sold everything they had, and they started training themselves by going to training and so on and so forth. And what, about a week, days before they were to fly out to Japan, they were moving from their home and they were going to, I think, somewhere in Minnesota or somewhere in the Midwest on their car with their children, all three children in the back. And this was their last training ground before they were to fly out to Japan as missionaries. A truck hit them from behind. All of them died on the spot. All five of them. Think about this event. How in the world do we make something good out of this? How can this be God's will? Did God take his eyes off for just a split second? Or did he plan this all along? Then why did he allow this couple to go through all of that if this is how it's going to end up? What about those precious children? I mean, we can go on and on and asking questions as to why. And in our limited scope, we just cannot see any possible way, any possible scenario, something good could come out of this. They're all dead, right? But God in his infinite wisdom, he knows something that we don't. And if we were to go to heaven and he were to reveal to us exactly what was going on in the background, then I think we would all agree with God. I think you're right, God. I understand why you took that family earlier than later. And we see that that was actually good for the kingdom, and that was good for them as well. We can't see it. I can't make anything out of it. I can't see possible reasons, but God is beyond our possible reasoning skills. And trusting God means trusting even though it does not make sense to us. Listen, anybody can be happy and anybody can follow God when things are going your way. Right? You pray, it's there. Right? I mean, you can do that. Everything is smooth sail. You got your job, you got your girl, your boy, or you know, you got into that school, whatever. You pray, hey, I'll follow God, I'll trust God, yes. But what happens when God follows God? When things are not going your way, when your prayers are not answered, do you still stay in and follow and trust God, or do you ditch and say, okay, I'm doing it my way? I'm trusting God didn't get me anywhere. How do we accept God's no? How we accept God's no shows our level of trust and our dependence on God. And being God's children means that we take his yeses as well as his no's. If my children ever said to us, Mom, Dad, I'll only be your child if you only say yes to everything I ask of you. What I say to my child or children,
No.
I'll say no to that first, and then I'll say a bunch of no after that. Why? Because I love you and I do not want to ruin you. Because if I were to say every yes to everything that you ask of me, then I will end up ruining you. You will be extremely unhappy, and I don't want that. I love you too much to say yes to every request that you make of me.
Right? If you're 12, 13 years old, you have a hard time understanding this.
I disagree. If I get everything I want, then I'll be happy.
You won't be, is what I'm saying. Hey, trust me on this one. And parents know this. Right? God knows this. His relationship with us. And thus, he tells us no. For our own sake, because he doesn't want us to be ruined. Physically, spiritually, forever. Right? So, when God says no, what are we to make of it? Let me share three things. What are we to make of God's no's? Number one, he has his own glory in mind. Number two, the alternative is worse. If God were to say yes, it might actually be worse for us. Number three, teaching us to trust him ultimately. That's what he's trying to do. And that's what we're to make of God's no's. So number one, he has his own glory in mind when God says no to our wishes. Give you one scenario. Lazarus in the New Testament. Remember him? He died. He had two sisters, Mary and Martha. They're mourning. And then Jesus comes, what? 2 days later? Or 4 days later? Actually, yeah, 4 days too late. And these sisters go up to Jesus and they ask individually, separately, the exact same question in the exact same way. I mean, they're sisters, right? And they basically say, Jesus, had you been here, my brother would not have died. Why? Because you could have healed him. We have seen you heal so many other people. What they're saying is, Jesus, where were you? Why weren't you here? Don't you love our brother? I thought you did. I thought you had a special relationship with us. And where were you? Why weren't you here healing our brother? And what does Jesus say to this? He says, in John 11:25, he says this, I am Mary. I am Martha. The resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Okay, that's a non sequitur answer. Right? Like, Jesus, where were you? Right? Why were you late? And the answer they're expecting is, oh, you know, my car broke down, or my mule, you know, kind of died, and that's why I was trying to make it. But no, Jesus is saying, no, I'm the resurrection and the life. Okay, so what good does that to me? She's not connecting at this point, right? But she says, well, I know that he will rise one day. Jesus, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. I let your brother die. I took 2 extra days to make sure that your brother died. I knew when he was going to die, and I made sure I waited long enough for him to die so that you would witness that somebody greater than life and death is in front of you. So that you will see my glory, as in glory as in weight, right? The weightiness of myself, the greater importance than life and death is in front of you. Because you're worried and you're anxious about death, but I will show you somebody greater than somebody who controls death is in front of you. That's what Jesus is saying to Martha and Mary, and he has proven it by bringing Lazarus out of the dead, out of the tomb, as we all know. In another encounter, very similar encounter with the blind man, the disciples ask him, so why was this man born blind, Jesus, as they're walking by, right? And was it his fault or was it his parents' fault that this man was born blind? Stupid question, insensitive question, right? And what does Jesus say? Jesus says, well, it's neither. It's not his fault or it's not his parents' fault. It was to show God's glory that this man was born blind. That's what Jesus says. And then what does he do? Puts mud on his face, literally, right? And then he creates eyeballs, and then now he can see. And then everybody glorifies God as in, wow, God, I thought blindness or disease was it, and that was the end, and that was a bad thing. But now we see that somebody greater than disease or greater than death itself is here. And so he weighs more than all the other things, and so they're glorifying him. They're making him shine. That's under the definition of glorifying, making him look good. So God's purpose in letting these seemingly unfortunate, bad, undesirable things in our lives is so that he he will be glorified. That's his ultimate purpose. Now, I know this is really hard to hear. And most churches that you go to nowadays, especially in the Northwest, you won't hear anything like that. Because this type of sermon does not draw people in. I want to hear, Pastor, when I pray that God's going to give me whatever I ask for. Amen. My best life now. Right now. Right? That's what I want to hear. Well, you're saying that God will say no. And sometimes he will let horrific stuff happen in my life. For me, I don't get it. I don't want that. I want another religion. I want another God. But that's what the Bible says. And I have to preach what the Bible says. God lets unfortunate events happen, and this is the truth. It is the truth. Look at your life. Look at people around you. Look at people who died, your loved ones who passed away or suffering terribly. Okay? This is the truth. But God, at times, will bring us to the brink of death for our sake. And God, at times, will bring us through death. In other words, he will let us die for our sake. Because, listen, death is not the worst thing. Death is not the most evil thing. What is the most evil thing? Hell is. Eternal death is the most evil thing. And sometimes, to prevent it, it will bring temporary physical death. But, Pastor, I'm sorry, your argument, I don't know if it works, because Jesus healed that blind man, and Jesus brought Lazarus back from the dead. But God has not done that for my loved one. He still remains in the grave. What about that? I don't think he's coming back anytime soon. What about that? Listen, Jesus didn't heal everyone, even when he was here on earth physically. Do you realize that? Notably, you know, Jesus did not heal that we expected him to heal. John the Baptist. Remember, he got his head chopped off because he said something right about King Herod? John the Baptist was Jesus' cousin. And according to Jesus, John the Baptist was the greatest man ever. Right? Even better than Abraham. If anybody, imagine if John the Baptist's head was cut off, right? Could he have raised him? Could he have put the head back? Yes, he could. Peter's ear cut off, and then Jesus just put it there, and he just regenerated it, right? Or he just put it back, right? Just glued it back together with his power, miracle arm, right? Jesus could have just put that back on John the Baptist, and he would have lit, and everybody would be like, right? Cousin! That's his older cousin! But he doesn't. So here's the principle I taught you before, right? Jesus did on earth for a few people what he will eventually do for everyone. Jesus did for a few people on earth what he will eventually do for everyone. He was demonstrating what? That he could do it. That he transcends death. He transcends disease. One greater than disease is here. It was for his glory. That's what he was demonstrating. And I will do it for all of you who put your faith and trust in me. So through knows, Jesus is demonstrating that God's glory comes first. Second, what does God's know communicate? Well, the alternative is worse, could be worse for us. Alternative is if God were to say yes to our request, it might actually be worse for us. You ever realize that? That's why God says no. For example, the Apostle Paul prayed 3 times for the thorn in the flesh. And that's the verse that we just read from 2 Corinthians. Right? He had some kind of thorn in the flesh, and the Bible scholars don't quite know exactly what that was. Some people thought that maybe it was an eye problem, or maybe it was a skin problem, or maybe a bowel problem, embarrassing problem, whatever. You don't know what it is, but it was some kind of physical, maybe spiritual, some of it, problem. And then Paul asked God to remove this problem from him. And from his perspective, knowing what we know of Paul, right, I'm thinking, man, God, this thing is really debilitating and restraining me. If I didn't have this illness, disease in my body, then I'll be a better witness for you. I'll lead more people to Christ. I'll plant more churches. I'll travel
to more parts of the world, and then your kingdom will grow more. So God, why don't you remove this thorn in my flesh? Perfect justification, right? Why would he do it when he is in the right set of mind, and then God's kingdom will grow, and it seems to be perfectly aligned with God's will? Why does he? Well, God says it every single time. My grace is sufficient for you. No. My grace is sufficient for you. No. My grace is sufficient for you. No, Paul, no. Thankfully, in this particular part, God explains why. Actually, Paul explains why, as to why God said no. Okay? Maybe one of the reasons, and you know what that is? That is that he did not want him to be proud. He did not want him to become so proud of what God has shown him, that exceeding revelations, Paul says, that he has shown him, such as he has went up to the third heaven and saw the glory of God and all kinds of things that he could not utter. He has seen all of them. He has given such spiritual power and spiritual giftings that if this wasn't, it wasn't for the thorn in his flesh, then he would become proud. That he would think that he is somebody. And then possibly ruin the ministry that God has given to him. For that reason, Paul says that this thorn in the flesh was given to me to keep me humble. How many evangelists, how many pastors, mega church pastors, right, like rock stars in the spiritual world, have defamed themselves, embarrassed themselves, humiliated themselves because they have built such a huge church, right, following, and then they do something stupid, thinking that they are kings and they can, you know, rule over anybody, and if they say a word that they should do it because they're used to it, because God has given them so much success, why not? They are somebody. And they end up just humiliating themselves, ruining themselves. They ruin their ministry, and more than that, they end up putting, right, a black mark on God's face, really, bringing a bad name to God. So God, in his grace, literally in his grace, he gave him that thorn in the flesh so that Paul will always remember. That's right. I healed everybody else, right? I mean, all I had to do is just touch them and they'll be healed, and I can't even heal myself. What power do I have? Nothing. Everything comes from God. God, you're everything. I am nothing. And that's why we have the books that we have. Using this great man. Why? Because he was humble. God gave him that thorn. God said no to his prayers. And that was a good thing for Paul. And a lot of times that's a good thing for us. So a heart that trusts God is a heart that says thank you when God says no. Because the alternative might have been worse for us. On our trip to Thailand last month, as you know, the first half of our trip was supposed to be Thailand, and then we were supposed to move to Myanmar, the second half of the trip. We never got to go to Myanmar because of a visa issue, and we were at the airport wondering why we can't go. And immediately our thoughts turned into, well, what have we done wrong, and what could we have done better? Whose fault is it? Right? But thank goodness we had some mature and veterans, you know, in our mission team. They immediately said, maybe God has something else in mind for us, and that's why he's not letting us go to Myanmar. Oh, what a novel thought, right? We've never thought of that. But that's exactly what it is, and that's exactly how we are to think. When God says no, immediately our reaction should not be, why not, God? I know better. Give it to me now. Make it happen. Rather, no. Oh, you must have something else in mind, and that must be better for your kingdom and for us as well. And in it, we got to go to this village that we have been going for the last 3 years, but somehow we kind of omitted it this year, but God wanted us to go to that village and go to that school, and that's where we got to go. And you know what? For whatever reason, every year, and I just thought occurred to me today, every year teachers would be with us, right? But this year, what we did was we added us telling the story of Abraham, Moses, and I kind of linked it to Jesus in the end. Now, if the teachers were present, I would not have been so comfortable telling the story. But teachers weren't that. Maybe they just trust us now because it's our third year there. And I was telling them all about the gospel, all about Jesus, how to get saved in a public school, okay, in a 98% Buddhist country.
So maybe that's what God had in mind, so that we can preach the gospel to kids. God had something else in mind that was actually better for his kingdom and for us, and that's why he said no. Sometimes, you know, we hold on to things so tightly and insist on it that we get burned and we get disappointed by God to the point of leaving our faith. Right? Our problem is, God, my business must survive. You're basically saying my business is my life. Right? If you don't give it to me, then else. My family must be this way. I must get into this school. I must get married to that boy or to that girl or else. What you're really saying is, God, I know better what I want. What I want is better than what you want for me, so don't you ever say no to me. Because I know what will make me happy better than you. Even though you made me and you know me better than I myself, but go there, my I want what I want. God won't have it. Because he loves us too much. Johnny Erickson Tata became paralyzed from the neck down through a diving accident at the age of 17-year-old. Imagine if you had a diving accident and you're paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of your life. Somebody has to brush your teeth every morning and evening. Right? When you go on number one and number two, somebody has to clean that up. Right? For 50 years, she lived as a quadriplegic. Right? And this woman, and she was a Christian, she went to one of those faith healing, you know, worship, you know, meetings where, you know, try to be healed and then they get up with their wheelchair and all of that. She went to all those things praying that God would show a miracle, but no. She spent 50 years in the wheelchair, right, having personal help every single day. And what does she say about her illness? And I read her book and she said, you know what? Even if I would have to do it again, I would let this happen again, because of the amazing ways that God has used me, used this debilitation to glorify his kingdom. So as a writer, as a very popular speaker, right? I mean, he mentors and speaks to guys like Matt Chandler or Francis Chan and so on. They quote him, you know, quote her like all the time, right? He has an older woman. I mean, inspiration to all people. And she would have never been able to do that as a head of the wheelchair for something, I forget, the nonprofit organization that she's helping many thousands of people all over the world. She would have never been able to do that if that accident did not happen. And God has been saying no to miraculous healings, really, so that she can be used for the kingdom of God in that way. So, alternative is not really better. God saying yes. Lastly, in all of this, God is leading us to trust him quickly. I'll be short. You know, it would be great if God were to explain everything to us, to put us at ease, why we suffer the way we do, right? The reason is, wouldn't it be great? He showed us why he said no. Sometimes he does, sometimes through his word, and sometimes through a wise counsel, we get to understand why, you know, we said no. But a lot of times we never get to know why God said no. We just have to think it, and we just have to trust him. But you know, that's just like a parent-child relationship, isn't it? Those of you who are parents, right? We explain every single little thing to our 8-year-old, why we said no, why they can't have ice cream at 9 o'clock at night, right? And we try to explain, and then they just don't understand, right? Because why? They just don't have enough life experience to understand it, and suffer the consequences that we have. They just don't. So what do? We try to explain, but at a certain point, you know what? You just have to trust me. I know what's better for you. They won't like that, but that's what it is, right? What do you do at that point? You can't explain. They won't understand. They refuse to understand. You just have to say, hey, this is how it is. Right? And that's how God is. Listen, how frustrating would it be for us if our children said to us, no, I won't listen until you explain it fully and it makes sense to me. Only then I'll follow you. No? Yeah. It's like, whack, right? You know? How frustrating would it be for parents? That means you don't trust my judgment. You think your determination, your judgment, your experience, your 12 years of experience is actually better than my 47. Is really what you're saying. Are you thinking you know better than I do? No. No, just know.
And God is the same way. So God says things like this. When you hear the pleading in his voice, God works all things for the good of those who love him.
All things, not just good things, but bad things too, horrific things. He works all things for the good of those who love him. You meant for evil, as Joseph said, right? But God meant it for good. Evil things happen, but God can turn it around. Or actually, God meant it so that good will come out of it. My ways are not your ways. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways higher than your ways. What is God saying? Just please, just do what I say. You won't understand even if I explain. I love you. I know better. Trust me. Follow me. So trusting God means trusting him through thick and thin. It's just like following a wedding vow. Do you remember your wedding vows? Young people, you don't remember obviously because you haven't done it yet, but wedding vows, something goes like this, until death goes apart. Right? Through thick and thin, through health and sickness, right? Through for the better and for the worse. I forget how it goes exactly, but you know, it's not only in good times when things are going well, right? Not only when God leads you in the green pastures, but also when he's leading you to the valley of the shadow of death, that he's with me. He's good for me. He's not going to ditch me. How can he who did not spare his own son for us? Right? How much will he give us all things if he did not spare his own son for us? The maximum love that anybody can show anyone, including God. So I must trust that he has what's good for me in his mind. So what if we thought this, and I end with this, what if we thought like this? My current circumstance is the best that it could be, or leading up to the best it could be. Your current circumstance right now, not, oh, what if I had that, then I'll be best. It would be best. What if I marry that? No. Right now, now, before your own gift gets realized, what if you thought your current circumstance right now is the best it could ever be? That's what it means to believe God works all things for the good of those who love him. It's leading up to it, or it is what it is the best it can ever be. Because if you were to get that, oh, only if I won that $1 million lottery, my life will be better, your life won't be better. Only if I meet that boy proposed to me and I'm married to him and he didn't, it won't be better if your dream got realized. That's what it means. For those of you, right, slightly older of you, only if I went to this and then I got this degree, or if I have invested in that piece of land now that's like 10 times what it is now, only if you had done that, your life wouldn't necessarily be better. You were a believer back then and you prayed through these things and God didn't grant it to you, then it's because that's what's best for you. That was what was good for you. Alternative is not any better. And in all of this, God is teaching us to trust him. Teaching us to trust him. God will say no to his children because he loves them. So understand, when he says no, first, he has his glory in mind. That's a good thing. That's not a selfish thing. Because when he is glorified, that's when we enjoy the maximum happiness. And then consider the alternative. If God had said yes to whatever he said no to, then you might be worse off. And then thirdly, God is teaching us to trust him. So let me ask you, in what area of your life is God asking you to trust him? Right? As I was speaking today, what is it the Holy Spirit was pointing at this one? You need to trust me on this one. You've been complaining to me about this one. You've been saying, only if this happens, then I'll be this and that, right? What is that area? And you give that area to God and say, even if that doesn't happen, God, as long as I have you, I have the best. Can you go there? That requires faith. If you can't go there, if you're still thinking, I have to have that. That has to happen for my own sake. Ask for faith, because that's what you don't have now. Ask God to help me, even if that doesn't happen. Because I have you, and because you're a good God, that my circumstance right now is the best